Studio 360.
The novelist Carl Hiaasen has been writing crime stories for decades, some of them true. Early in his career, he served on the Miami Herald's investigations team, reporting on medical malpractice and drug smuggling. Then he started writing novels about freaks doing criminally freaky things, all set in Florida. You think Florida's a zany, grotesque place with more grifters and nutballs and sleazy developers and corrupt politicians than anywhere else in America? Well, that's pretty much Carl Hiaasen's doing.
On the hottest day of July, trolling in dead calm waters near Key West, a tourist named James Mabry reeled up a human arm. His wife flew to the bow of the boat and tossed her breakfast burritos.
That's the opening scene of Hiaasen's novel Bad Monkey from 2013.
"What are you waiting for?" James Mabry barked at the mate. "Get that thing off my line." The kid tugged and twisted, but the barb of the hook was embedded in bone. Finally, the captain came down from the bridge and used bent-nose pliers to free the decomposing limb, which he placed on shaved ice in a deck box. James Mabry said, "For Christ's sake, now where are we supposed to put our fish?" "We'll figure that out when you actually catch one."
The story shifts to a disgraced police detective named Andrew Yancey, who learns about the severed limb and becomes determined to figure out where it came from.
Well, Yancey is a cop, sort of imagines himself a hotshot detective in the Keys, Monroe County, and he gets in some trouble, romantic trouble, ends up losing his badge, and they demote him. But he's trying to get back on the regular police force by solving this arm is floated, and it was caught by a tourist on a fishing boat, and everyone thinks it's obviously a victim of a boating accident, somebody that got hit in the propeller or whatever, and he's suspicious, and so he sets off, and the arm ends up in his freezer, in his personal in the freezer with the popsicles for a great length of time, and he feels now an obligation to it.
The book's bad guy is this fraudulent Medicare profiteer, and you call in the book South Florida America's Medicare fraud capital.
Yeah, it is.
Which you've also written about in columns.
Yes.
Medicare fraud. Do you, at this point, think of your day job as a kind of R&D's end of your fiction writing?
That's absolutely true, Kurt. I mean, I probably couldn't write the novels I write if I didn't at least have one toe in the newsroom. And in the sense, not that I'm physically there, but I'm writing and I'm engaged and I'm reading all the different newspapers in Florida. And so this constant over-the-transom flow of sleaze inspires the novel. It can't help to. It also keeps you angry enough because you know that. I mean, a lot of the funniest writers I know, funniest people I know, have a deep vein of anger, and it's a sense of sort of ironic outrage at things. And they're not happy-go-lucky people. I mean, they're writing for a reason. If you go back, Mark Twain was not a sunny personality most of the time. So this is how you get it out.
And for a guy who writes very angrily a lot, you don't seem angry at all. Maybe you get it out in your writing.
I get it. I mean, it's pure. I tell people it's psychotherapy for me. I'd do it if I didn't have to do it, I think. And I have been since. I mean, the feeling started when I was very young. I mean, I was 5 or 6 when they started paving my childhood, right? You know, the boom years of Florida back in the late 50s, early 60s, all throughout, just watching it disappear. Even as a kid, you have a sense of outrage. I don't know, you didn't know politically what was, how did this happen? How did they do it? But it still pissed you off.
Yeah.
And so I vented from an early age, and I got lucky and later went to work for the newspaper and got a newspaper column eventually, and I got to vent there a lot. But the books are good too because I get to write my own endings on the books.
you called South Florida in one of your recent columns the poster child for national dysfunction. Why is that? Why so much weirdness and rot in this one place? And at this point, as I said at the outset, thanks partly to you, all of America regards Florida as this special, unfortunate case.
It's always been a land where dreamers have come. And when you have people with a dream and with an image and sort of an iconic sense of we're going to move down there and everything's going to be fine, you also have a predatory element that moves with it. I've always told people, I said, if you are a car thief, for example, if you steal cars for a living, would you rather steal cars in Detroit, Michigan in January or on Miami Beach in January? Where would you rather be?
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
Now, other than the fact that you like to play golf or at least you've written about playing golf and you like to fish, does it ever strike you as odd that you choose to live in this place that you have made a career sort of savaging and satirizing?
Yeah, I've been trying to scare people away from Florida for literally 35 years, and I still get letters from readers saying, we love your books, but please don't be mad. We're moving to Florida anyway. Where else? I really have roots. I love the place enough to stay and fight. It's easy to bail out and move to, Santa Fe or something and put on some clogs and walk around and look at the art galleries or whatever. But I can't do that. You can't disengage. It's the same way so many writers are connected to New York.
Right. Even despite its expense, its difficulty,
and
all
its frustrations and all the headaches, they could never pull themselves away to be creative somewhere else. And that's sort of the way I feel.
The Demi Moore movie, Striptease, was an adaptation of your novel.
Mm.
As a chronicler of eccentrics and sleaze, how did Hollywood stack up against South Florida?
They were very nice to me. Everybody was. Demi was everything. I went in with very modest expectations, if I can put it like that. When you have a nightclub in the book called The Eager Beaver, this is not Citizen Kane material. I never went in with that thinking that.
Citizen Kane wasn't Citizen Kane material.
Right. But I always tell people, say, oh, but I didn't look what they did to your book. And I said, they didn't do anything to my book.
Right.
They made a movie.
Exactly.
If you can pick the book out of the shelf in the library and it's the same book, you can't take it too seriously. I know writers that have been completely poleaxed by the whole Hollywood experience, and they take it so intensely and personally.
But just go in with zero expectations.
No, and also the whole process is satirical in many ways. Meetings and the notes you get if you can't laugh, you'll go out of your mind.
I was happy to see on your bio on your website that you say of that film, Burt Reynolds slathered from neck to toes with Vaseline is one of the golden moments in modern American cinema. Your fellow Floridian.
Yeah,
Burt.
He was a trip on the set, I'll tell you. And he was very nice to me. But that one scene, which was right out of the book, and I had modeled his character after my own congressman who had gotten busted in a strip joint. I just poached it from the headlines. And the guy passed away right before the movie came out, and I always felt bad because he would have been so flattered. He looked nothing like Burt Reynolds, I can assure you. I think Herb Burke was his name. I think he would have been very thrilled to have been portrayed even the way Burt did it.
You published quite a few novels before your big commercial breakthrough, Striptease. That is a lot of writing and publishing to do before the world says, my God, you're this great best-selling novelist. Did you ever get close to saying, maybe this isn't working out?
Never. Because you know what? I always, you know what it's like when the box of books comes. You busted your ass writing this thing. And then months go by. It's like this gestation. And then the books come. And it's still a big high to do it.
Yeah.
And I never felt like giving up, because the other thing is I had to do it, Kurt. I was working in the newsroom all day then, and then on the investigations team where we didn't write that much.
Right.
You might write once every 3 or 4 months on a project. So you get all this writing energy built up, and the books were what got me through that. So I wouldn't have stopped no matter how many rejection letters.
You felt fortunate to be published?
I still do.
Yeah.
Still do.
Carl Hiaasen, this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. It's great fun.
Carl Hiaasen's latest book is called Assume the Worst, the graduation speech you'll never hear. The readings of Bad Monkey were from the audiobook read by Artie Johnson, the Artie Johnson.